So today's topic is the path of perfection. The chapter 9, the path of perfection. Some of the ideas are from the chapter and some of them I have got from other sources. So just to summarize, our body, even though we say I am the body, but the body is clothes that we wear. That's what Sri Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita. Vasamsi jirnani yatha vihai navani grahanati naroparani. Just as a man or a woman gives up old clothes when they are no longer useful, either they are old or they are out of fashion or they no longer fit that person, then she drops old clothes and puts on new clothes. Similarly, the individual, you and I, we are this mind and intellect. Actually, we are that consciousness, but at least for this practical purposes, until we reach that, we can say, I am this mind and intellect, and I have put on this garment of these clothes that I use to cover myself, and the clothes have certain utilitarian value, and so the body also has certain value. But when the body is no longer useful to me, either it's got when we get too old, or maybe for that particular life, this body is now no longer necessary for me. And it could even be a young child, you know, a few months or a few years, or a young man or a woman. Or it could be a person who's very old in his 90s. But when this body is no longer useful, then this individual drops the body. So you and I are this mind and intellect. Our emotions and our ideas and vasanas, our desires. Consciousness, of course, is the same in every one of us. There is only one God, one consciousness. And this body is something that is expendable. It's not something that is permanent. Nobody can keep this body permanently, no matter how hard you try, how healthy you eat, how much you exercise, how much care you take, sooner or later, we have to drop this body and take on a new body if you believe in reincarnation. If you don't, then okay, then we live in heaven or hell, but our time on this life is limited. And what decides what kind of individual I am? It is the Vida Vasanas. It is my tendencies. We know that very well. A person with good tendencies will do good actions. Person with evil tendencies will do evil actions. And the difference between a saint and a sinner is all in the vasanas. The Lord, the consciousness, is the same. And how do we function? How does this life work? So they say that the sense organs, the eyes see, the ears hear, the nose smells, the tongue tastes, and the skin touches. So I get all these sense impulses through the body, sense organs, into the mind. And the mind digests them, absorbs them, understands, and then passes it on to the intellect to decide. And the intellect then uses the organs of action to act. So the sense organs are the eyes, ears, nose, skin, and tongue. And the organs of action are the hands, the feet, the speech, hands, feet, speech, organs of excretion, and organs of procreation. So there are 5 organs of action and 5 sense organs, and there is continuously a traffic going on. Like now we are listening to this, and then the mind is digesting, you know, it makes sense, doesn't make sense. I should come to this class, not come to this class. So all those ideas, you know, come based on what the mind and intellect, how they judge these activities. And religion is said to be a policeman, or like a very benevolent policeman. Of course, here when there's traffic lights, but says the power goes out and there is a big traffic jam, then what happens? The policeman will come. It's more, you see it in India and other countries where not everywhere they have traffic lights, but there's a policeman standing and then he's directing first this way and then this way, and then he'll stop and make them turn left. So what the traffic light does, a human policeman can do that, and we see that a lot in India. So religion is the policeman that guides us. The traffic of these sense organs and organs of action, this constant activity, to be done in the right direction, just as the traffic, if it did not, or you can say traffic lights, you know, traffic lights also, if they were not there, there would be chaos. You know, nobody would know which way to go. But the traffic lights decide, okay, now first this lane will go, then the middle lane will go, and then the traffic will stop, and then the other side. So similarly, religion decides for us which is the right way to go and directs the traffic of our life in the right direction. But at the mind level, one is react. So a person says something to me, and I instantly get mad, and that person has says one thing, I say 10 things to him. And then what happens, all that bitterness is in me and it immediately comes out, and then that becomes a long-term thing, because then this person never forgets. So one is to react, where you instantly at the level of the mind just takes over and decides. But if the intellect gets into this and the person thinks about it and decides, okay, why did she say this or why did he do this? Then that is called respond, where you see the impulse that comes, you think about it, and then you produce an appropriate response. But then that response doesn't come instantly, but comes out of previous knowledge, understanding. So that's why they say in life, respond, but do not react. So when a situation comes that is pleasant or unpleasant, do not get very quickly swayed, especially in unpleasant situations where somebody says something. Think about it. Why do you think this person said it? What was the reason? And once you do that, then your response will be more appropriate. You could talk to that person, or you could decide to remain silent, or you could decide to ignore. So there are many things that we can do if we respond appropriately rather than immediately react and then later on you regret it. And as we know, we are our mind and intellect and tendencies. As my emotions, as my ideas, as my tendencies, so are we. That's what they say. There is a saying, I think, therefore I am. You know, that's the common saying. But Vedanta says, I am, therefore I think. So I exist, only then I can think. People think, I am the thoughts. No, I am in charge of my thoughts. I exist and the thoughts exist in me. So when people say, oh, I am so stressed and my mind is racing 100 miles an hour and I can do nothing about it, and I am, who gives life to the thoughts? You do. We do, as a life, as consciousness. If I was not awake, if I was not existing, definitely my mind would not be running. So we have to control our mind, our intellect, our ideas, and slowly purify our desires by pure emotions and right ideas. So I have to purify the mind, and I have to get right ideas and thereby improve the vasanas. So then in our scriptures, there's a text called Kathopanishad, which is, I think Vimalji had done it a year or so back, very beautiful text where this young boy goes to the Lord of Death and asks him questions about life. And the whole text is a dialogue between the Lord of Death, Yama, and this young boy, who very evolved soul. And there the teacher tells him that there are two paths, Preya and Shreya. Preya is the path of pleasant and Shreya is the path of good. And there may be some activities which are both pleasant and good. There may be some, but the majority of the time, if we choose what is pleasant, generally we are going away from the good. So if I choose something that I enjoy, that gives me a lot of joy and fun and pleasure, not that one should not, but just picking that path. And so in life, constantly we have the choice. This path is pleasant, but it is taking me away from my goal of spiritual growth. This path is good, and it's taking me upwards. So constantly in our life, man is faced with these two choices. Should I choose the pleasant, which is temporary? See, joy in these objects is temporary. When I do something just for fun, it's okay, even though it's not the right thing to do, but you know, it's okay, let me have a few drinks, or let me use this or do this, or let me go here or there and, you know, have fun. But if that same amount of time that we are spending in enjoying life, and it's okay to have fun, but constantly, if that's all we are doing, then that much time you are taking away from spiritual activities, from activities for upliftment. So the path of pleasant takes us to OET, the objects, emotions, and thoughts, and the path of good takes us upwards to God within. So that's why they say, the choice is yours. Somebody said, success cannot be spelt without you. So you have to decide whether you are successful or unsuccessful. And what is the definition of successful? I heard a very good definition from one of the Swamis of Chinmaya Mission. He said, I asked him, how do I know that I'm spiritually growing? So he said that if things that used to bother you in the past don't bother you anymore, then you know you are spiritually growing. So success is within us as to how we deal with situations and do not let them affect us. Then in the sixth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, which is the chapter Dhyana Yoga, chapter of meditation, the teacher, the Lord himself, gives a very beautiful verse, Udaret Atmanatmanam Na Atmanam Avsadayet Atmaiv Hi Atmano Banduhu Atmaiva Ripur Atmanaha. So the Lord says that you have to lift yourself by yourself. Do not expect anybody else, whether it's a guru, whether it's a teacher, whether it's your parents, whether it's, you know, co-workers or friends or children. Nobody can help you. If you want to lift, you have to lift yourself by yourself. So ultimately, self-effort is the only way to succeed in life. Even if somebody helps you, say somebody's parents are very rich and they give him everything in life, what they're doing is they're ruining him, because eventually this person has to go out and live alone and himself. And so it is important to be independent. And so only I can lift myself, nobody can lift me. And then the teacher goes on to say, once having risen on the spiritual path, do not fall back down. See, what happens is we start doing very good. Okay, I'm going to serve, I'm going to help, and I'm going to meditate, and I'm not going to get upset, and I'm going to control my anger. And we do that for a while, and then something happens and we say, it's okay, you know, today if I don't meditate, it's fine. Or I got angry with somebody, it's fine. Or I did something that was wrong. Or I compromised on my values. So they say that once you have evolved to a certain level, do not fall back down, because you are your own best friend and you are your own worst enemy. So mind that is attached to objects is an enemy. Mind that is attached to God is my friend. So I am my own best friend. I am my worst enemy. There was another wonderful author, a bestseller, who said that people who are successful delay gratification. It's not that they don't enjoy life, but they delay it. I don't have to do it right now. I should decide when I'm going to gratify my senses. So you live a life of self-control and you delay it. Okay, I don't need it right now. It's not important for me. And what a lot of times what will happen is when you delay this gratification, ultimately the desire will drop off by itself. If the desire comes and you right away indulge it, then you are living at the level of the mind, at the level of instinct. But if you say, no, let me not do it right now, I don't need it, then that delayed gratification will, at oftentimes, the desire will drop off. I don't need to do it. So that's why delaying the gratification instead of instantly, in this modern age, everything is okay. You feel like doing it, go ahead and do it. You want to buy a car, go ahead and buy a car, a new phone, a new this, a new that. Go to the resort, go to the beach, eat, drink, beer. You know, constantly the TV is bombarding us and the internet is bombarding us. So we have to decide what is I need and what I do not need. And if you go towards the path of the good, that is called a step ahead. And there was another great teacher who said, a step ahead takes you to heaven, and a step back takes you to hell. And hell and heaven is not some place somewhere else after death, it is here itself. So as I go towards the good, I'm going towards heaven. As I go towards the pleasant, I'm going backwards towards hell. And hell is right here. If I'm upset, if I'm agitated, if I'm disturbed, I'm in hell. But if I'm calm, if I'm peaceful, if I'm loving, smiling, then life is heaven. So heaven and hell is right here, right now, not after death. And the teachers tell us that God is so merciful, or you can say the universe or whatever you want to call it, that there are repeated chances to improve. It's not that one time I did it and I'm condemned to hell forever. In God's eyes, nobody is condemned to hell forever. There is always a chance to improve. In the Gita, he says, in one place, he says, even the worst sinner who has done the worst possible things, if he turns to me with love, God says, if he turns to me with love, in my eyes, he is a saint. Even the worst sinner who may have done. So the point is that there is never a chance that you cannot say, you know, the life I have lived, it's so terrible. I don't think God will ever accept me. You know, I don't even feel like going to church or temple. God's arms are always wide open. His home is always available to us. All we have to do is step into it. And again, as Jesus said, the kingdom of God lies within. So turn your attention inward to God and you will reach. And then life should be about sharing and not keeping. There is a story I've told long time ago, but I think it's worth repeating. So there was this man who was so rich. He earned so much and very, very wealthy. Never shared a penny, never gave anything to anybody. Said, I have earned it, why should I give it? And, you know, never, even though when you earn, there are so many people like his employees who played a role and his customers and his teachers who had taught him, but he didn't think that anybody helped. So his time came when he was getting old and he knew that he's not going to live very long. His body was getting weaker. So he decided that what I'm going to do is a small portion of his wealth, he converted into gold bars and diamonds and pearls and precious jewels and put them in a suitcase full of, you know, precious gold and all. And he put them in the attic of his house. And he said, I'm going to die at home. He told his family, when I get sick, I do not want to go to the hospital. I'll stay home. You bring doctors here, bring nurses here, bring medicines. But I'll die at home. And he had his bedroom just below the attic where the suitcase was. And he said that when I die, I'm going to carry the suitcase up so that when I go, you know, in the afterlife, the money will come handy. Having gold bars and, you know, diamonds, you know, will be handy anywhere I go. So his family honored his wishes and he stayed there. And so happened that he got sick and he passed away. And so his wife and his children were all by his bedside and he, you know, peacefully passed away because he didn't want to go to the hospital. And so they all ran up to the attic to see if the suitcase, that little briefcase with the gold, was whether it was there or whether he took it. And so they go up there and the suitcase is still there. So his wife started crying. She said, you know, I told him so many times, put it in the basement. So sharing is one of the ways that we evolve, you know, by helping others, by sharing what we have. So that is comes in the path of good rather than in the path of the pleasant. The path of the pleasant is I have, let me enjoy. But let me share my joy with others. That's what uplifts you and makes your life pure. But the beauty of this is that the Lord is so merciful that when you share with others and you give what you have, He gives you a lot more back, not only in emotional satisfaction, in spiritual satisfaction, but even materially. When something is given in a good cause, it is never wasted. The Lord gives you much more back in return. So they say, live a life of self-control. When if you want to live, have good life, you want to have success, you should live a life of self-control, balanced, moderate life. In the sixth chapter of the Gita, again, it is said that one should eat moderately, not overeat and not starve myself. Some people will do that every occasion, especially in India or among Indians. They will fast on this day and that day and this day and, you know, torture their body or others. So not eating or eating too much is not good. Sleeping too much, you know, sleeping for hours on hand or sleeping very little. I get up at 3 and I meditate for 2-3 hours and I only sleep 3-4 hours. That's also not healthy. So eating too much and not eating is not healthy. Sleeping too much, not sleeping is not healthy. So one should live a life of moderation, eat moderately, sleep moderately and talk moderately. That's something I think we all need to learn, that where should I speak and where should I not speak. Again, not, you know, completely becoming silent is not good, but unnecessarily talking, just picking up the phone. And nowadays people don't talk, they text. But it's the same thing. You know, if you are just WhatsApp, you know, people spend so much time. You know, I actually somehow got involved with my medical school WhatsApp group. Somebody put me in there. And there used to be 60 messages every day because there were like 70 or 80 people. And they're constantly, I mean, some of it stuff was good. Some of it was just, you know, what am I doing and how are... And if you don't open your phone for 2 days, 120 messages. I said, oh God, I was there for a few weeks. And then I said, forget this. This is too much. Because then your mind gets, obviously, when you open it, then you want to see what they have written. And so I said, I removed myself from that chat group. So that's what I'm saying. Unnecessarily talking where we'd have nothing to say. So practice silence, and what they recommend is that some amount of time every day, just sit and in silence, do nothing. Maybe after your meditation in the morning is the best time. Take a cup of tea or coffee and just sit in the backyard with the trees. Weekdays I don't have time, but weekend I definitely do that. At least half an hour, 45 minutes, just sit in silence. And it is so peaceful because we have just meditated and, you know, the day has not started yet. And then I try to delay my, you know, weekend. I'm not going to start right away. And another thing I heard recently from somebody, do not open your phone as soon as you get up. In the olden days, it used to be newspaper. I used to love to do that. You know, first thing I come on the breakfast table, I open the newspaper. I still get, I'm one of the few who still gets the Bakersfield Californian 7 days a week. And then I said, immediately your mind goes into the world, what Trump is doing, what this one is doing, what's happening in Iran, Iraq, and Middle. Why do I need to know all that? So I don't open my newspaper. And do not turn your phone on. Leave your phone plugged, leave it there. And at least half an hour, if you can, spend in that silence. Enjoy your own company. Enjoy the own bliss. And that is very, very important. So spending some time in silence, and especially with nature, because nature is so bountiful. She gives us so much. Just sitting with the morning, listening to the birds and the wind rustling through the trees and the sun rising. It's the most beautiful. So if you can do that every morning or at night. At night is another time when the dinner is over, all the work is done. The moon is so bright these days, and then Jupiter is on one side and Venus is on the other. If you look at the moon at night, you will see Jupiter in the east and Venus in the west. It's so pretty, both of them, and the moon in the middle. So just spend some time with nature. And now the weather is nice, so even at night you can, you know, sit in your backyard. And so if you build yourself, then only you can build the nation. What is nation? Nation is all of us. The whole world is all of us. So if I improve myself, then and then alone, the world can improve. So that is the essence of this. The path of perfection is the path of good versus pleasant. So the more you pick good, the more success you have, the more you will lift yourself and step forward. So these are the some beautiful ideas. Some of them I got from the chapter, and then some of them I read from other sources. So I thought it will be a good combination. I really enjoyed preparing for this. I usually come here a little earlier in the afternoon, and so for me it's a beautiful Thursday afternoon. At least an hour or two I spend here, and it's very uplifting for me. So that's what I did here today. So any questions, any comments? Yes.
What do you do when you're in a situation where you want to improve your relationship with who? It could be anybody, family or anybody, and they don't want to talk about it. they don't want to talk. I mean, you just, or they say something like, well, we think you're like this or you do this, and you don't. Maybe you did in the past, but you don't now, but they don't want to talk about it. They don't want to talk and improve the situation. Or they might even accuse you of something that you didn't do it, but then they don't want to talk about it. You can defend yourself, but they don't want to hear your defense.
I'll tell you.
If it's a stranger, who cares? But somebody you valued, and they're not giving you a chance to defend yourself, they're just like, I don't want to talk about it, or something. Yeah.
Okay, I'll tell you a secret. I'll tell you a secret. Men, that's how they control the situation.
Oh.
So that is the man's way, because women love to talk and talk it out. And he'll say, I don't want to talk. So he controls you.
Right.
I'll decide when I will talk. Oh. And then the woman will say, can you please talk? Or are you upset? And can you please? So the woman is trying to, and he's, I don't want to talk about it. So he becomes the superior. And that is a typical man-woman
man-woman
dynamic. And so do not let it bother you. If he doesn't want to talk about it, fine. Goodbye. I don't want to talk about it either. Because if you try to talk, then he becomes the superior and you become inferior. You are the supplicant. Can we please talk? Why are you so upset? And when the situation in the house is very cold, then the woman gets disturbed more.
Right.
Men is there. I don't care. He may be inside, but he'll act like. And the woman says, things are so bad, and there is so much tension in the house and so much stress. And she'll try to fix it, because that is a feminine tendency to fix situations. And that's how men control. So if he doesn't want to talk about it, tell him, fine, I don't want to talk about it either. Why should I make myself inferior by begging him to talk about it? Tell him, you don't want to talk about it? That's fine. You want to give me the cold treatment? I can give you as much cold treatment back. And when you do that, when you become equally strong, then he'll realize he can no longer manipulate you.
Yeah.
And this silent treatment or cold treatment is man's typical way of controlling woman.
Oh.
So this is a secret that...
You're
I'm telling you, it is so true.
Really?
It is 100, and in every relationship you will find that. So just say, you don't want to talk about it? Fine, I don't want to talk about it either. Go for a walk. Or put on the TV or good look at your phone and let him stew in his own juices. And that is in his anger. After a time, he will realize that this strategy is no longer working on this woman, and he'll shape up. So if you become the supplicant, inferior, then he will use that. But if you say, you don't want to talk, it's okay. You can give me the cold treatment. I can give you as much back. Not that you fight away, you ignore him. Okay, you don't want to talk? I'm fine. I don't want to talk either. And the moment you say, I am fine, he won't like that.
Mm-hmm.
So then you can sit and talk. Okay, you want to talk now? Let's talk. But otherwise, it's okay. As long as he doesn't want to talk, I don't want to talk either. So
what if the person never wants to solve the problem?
It's okay, let him not. So what? Why do you have to? Is it your responsibility to solve the problem? No. If he's not interested in solving it's okay, that's fine. After a while, he will realize that the strategy is not working, and then because it bothers him too, he may act like it doesn't, but men act like it doesn't bother them, but it does. It bothers everybody, the silence. So just let it be for a while, a day or two, and things will shape up.
Yeah, some women do that too. I've noticed there's women who act like that too.
Right.
Sometimes it's the other way around. They don't want the conflict. They don't want to talk about it. So they go out of the room.
Right.
So that's just not fair to the other person who wants to solve the problem. Right.
So it's okay. You cannot solve the problem unless they are both willing.
Both willing.
Yeah. If they are willing, fine. If not, it's okay. You don't want to talk to me, I'm fine. See, the moment you say that, and then immediately that person will shape up.
Okay.
No, that's very true.
It's very true.
And the moment you tell a woman, she says, yeah, that's right. That's what he does. And it changes the dynamic in the relationship. It from one superior and one inferior to the dynamic of equality. And that's very important in a relationship. Equality in anything with friends, with co-workers, same thing. Co-worker, he'll say, I don't want to talk to you, and then they'll ignore you, and then you feel so bad, why is this person not talking? And then you go and say hi and smile at that person, and the person looks the other way, and then you say, oh, it's so unpleasant in the office. You just keep on chanting the name of the Lord, close your eyes and say Om Namah Shivaya, or whatever the name of the Father. He doesn't want to talk. What that will do is it will make your mind peaceful.
Yeah.
Instead of your mind dwelling upon this guy, let dwell upon God.
Mm-hmm.
Or go for a walk and enjoy the nature. It's so beautiful. Go sit in the park.
Another thing is, keep a smile on your face, and trust me, even if you have to act as a fake smile and happy.
Yeah.
Honestly, that kills the other person.
Right.
That's that true. Really
no,
does.
They say be amused in life. Don't take it so seriously.
It's just the control. People like to control.
I got it.
What it is. Control.
Yes.
Some they're men, some they're women. It's not all men like that. But there are some men.
Yeah.
No, all men are like that. I'm just joking.
Yeah. But I have two sons.
The men are telling me, why are you telling our secrets?
I had five brothers, uh-huh. And of course, I had a husband, and then now I have two sons.
Mm-hmm.
But my one son,
mm-hmm.
even he lives with his mother,
mm-hmm.
he tried to control me. And I just, what I do?
What?
I just smile. Oh, really? Hmm. And then he will sulk about it. It's the other way around now. He will be quiet. He will not talk to me.
Uh-huh.
And I just laughing me. I talk to my birds, do everything, whatever to do. And he thinks it doesn't affect mom at all. Why she's not?
Right.
Yeah, that's like you need some money.
Yeah. And
true.
Why is not bothering? Why should I be? It's my home. It's my, So, and I'm just saying, oh, when are you moving? Did you say?
But shouldn't you eventually get to the root, the problem that you really need to discuss with that person? Let's say you really need to discuss something.
Yeah, but
they thought about you, or they misthought or things.
Yeah.
Shouldn't you eventually
You can tell that person that there is something we should talk about. When you're ready to talk about it, let me know.
Mm-hmm.
And if he's not ready, there's no point of thrusting yourself upon that individual. And say, okay, you want to talk about it? Let's talk. If he says, I'm not interested, okay. But there is something I do need to tell you.
Eventually we need to talk. Because they think if they don't talk about it, it's just going to go away and you're never going to
And you can make one or two sentences that this problem has been longstanding, it's not going to go away. But when you're ready to talk about it, let me know.
Okay.
Rather than trying to force yourself upon
it. My son, he comes back and says, Mom, both of us, we are so stubborn. And, it's funny. I'm so much like you because we both are stubborn.
Mm-hmm.
And so I try to tell you what to do, and you try to tell me what to do. And I just laugh about it. I say, you got it. I said, but you remember, you live here, your mom's house. house. Mom's rules are mom's rules. And I'm so too sad, too bad, you know? Mm-hmm. So you have to obey the rules.
You know, if I felt more peace and joy and love coming through me, it probably I wouldn't be taking it so,
right.
If I felt, so if I just tune into that more,
with practice, the more you connect with the more you connect with God, the more peaceful and the more strong you become. So make Him your anchor and connect with the
I'm
Lord.
Working on that. I'm working on that.
And then just do it, and then ultimately He will take care of it.
Right.
And when your desire is pure, and when your intentions are good, He will fix the situation.
Exactly.
So you just surrender to Him and say, God, You are the one. I can't do it.
Right.
So have this attitude of surrender. That's very, very important. I said yesterday in the class, I said, if this tube light thinks I am illumining the room, that is stupid. It's foolish. Mm-hmm. The tube light is illumining because there is PG&E with a power which is coming from. So similarly, if I think I am doing it, that is foolish. It is the Lord within me that is the electricity, the energy. We talked about it yesterday in the class. So the energy is coming from somewhere else, coming from Om, from within. And so surrender to that and become an instrument. The tube light says, I'm an instrument. I don't illumine the room. I just illumine because of the energy that is coming. So that's how you surrender to the Lord. Thank you. It was a good discussion.